Okay, in Parshas Truma we have the building of the Mishkan, specifically the Krashim, the walls that would go around and build the actual physical structure that made the courtyard of the Mishkan. So the Torah says in Shmos and Perech Avav that the Krashim and the Mishkan were set up k'mishpato. They were set up according to the way they are supposed to be, according to the law. So the Yushalmi and Shabbos and Perek Beis asks, V'yachlif, why would we have to know they're set up k'mishpato? So Amar Ravimi, Vakamtes HaMishkan K'mishpato, that they'll be set up according to its law. V'chiyesh Mishpat La'isim. There's laws about how you set up wood. It's a bunch of wooden pillars. What's the law about you put up the pillar next to the next one? It doesn't take such a brilliant five-year-old can put together a Lego set. What's so difficult about putting it in its proper spot? B'chiyesh mishpat la'itzim ela yizeu keresh zachal hinasim b'tzafon hinasim b'tzafon b'darim hinasim b'darim. Whatever keresh, whatever stave, whatever pillar of the Mishkan was put the first time in the northern side must be in the same spot in the northern side the next time it's put together, and the same one in the southern side must be the same one on the southern side. The Gemara and Shabbos is discussing this because this is the source of the Malacha of Kosev. This is where writing was done in the Mishkan, because they would have to write Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet on each one to make sure it was in the proper position as it was from the last time. The Yushami then goes on to tell a story that we didn't bring over here on the sheets, but it tells the story about Rav Hoshea and the family of Barpazi. Rav Hoshea and the family of Barpazi were two different groups, and they would go visit the Nasi. They would go visit the leader of the Jewish community in Bavel. And Rav Hoshea was always given the opportunity to visit the Nasi first. He was always told he gets first rights. If they ever got there at the same time, Rav Hoshea was escorted in first, and then the family of Barpazi would come in second to meet the Nasi. Now, the family of Barpazi became mechudin with the Nasi. They married into the Nasi's family. So Barpazi thought, maybe now that we're related, we'll get in to see the Nasi, the leader of the Jewish community, first, because no, we are protexia, we're related now, so we'll be able to go in first. So in response, they were told, no, the Krashim and the Mishkan. But we see that if somebody has a certain prominence, a certain order of placement, so they always have the same place, no matter what. And since Rav Hoshea was given the first spot to go and visit the Nasi the first time, so too he should be given it, even though the family of Barpazi is now related to them. So this idea that whatever is in its significant spot must be in the same area, so this is cited lahalacha. The Yam Shal Shlomo in Yevamos and Perek Aleph says, he says, I heard from Mehazakein Maharik that he heard from his father-in-law, Rav Kalanimus, who explained, Shatam She'enu Ela L'simin Liada. He says, sorry, the first line said, a mitzvah atara. The fact that we put an atara, some sort of crown, so to speak, some sort of marking on our talis, is simin liyeda kol pam mahayazacha min hatalis liyos al harosh. Because each time the front of the talis should always be in the same position, no matter what. Min hatzal the darom, min hatzal the sheni the tzafon. That whatever was in the front should always be in the front. Whatever is in the back of the talis should be in the back. Shim lo yisaimen as yisapech elyon latachton. Because then maybe one time you put on the talis, and that which was usually in the front will now be in the back. Uma'alya b'kuri ve'ein marid isemal mekodesh ein maridin. So says the father-in-law of the Yam Shel Shlomo, the Rav Shlomo Luria, that the whole Gemara the Yushami is based on the principle of malin v'kodesh ein maridin. Whatever has had a status of kedusha, a holier aspect, we don't take it from the placement that it was before. If it attained a certain status, then we don't demote it from the status that it had. We'll have to discuss in a second what's so great about being in the front of the talis. But we assume for a moment that there's something special about the tzitzis in the front of the talis, and therefore they should be given that due respect each time. Ve'af ein mishan and vehevi rai brings the Yerushalmi from the Perek of Habona that we just said that the Krashim have to be in the same spot. So the Krashim had to be in the same side of the Mishkan because there were certain aspects of Kedusha they had, perhaps because some on one side were closer to the Kodesh HaKadoshim or closer to other aspects as well. And others were further away, and therefore it wasn't as holy as before. Now, the Bikurei Yaakov explains that he thinks that the ones that were holier were in the north, because all Kodshei Kodshim were slaughtered in the northern part, and Kodshim Kalim could be slaughtered in the north or the south. So therefore, the north was considered a more Kadosh part to Shecht animals, and therefore it was holier in that regard, and therefore that's why it was holier. Whatever it might be, so we see that once something has attained a certain holy status, it should retain that position no matter what goes on in the future. An earlier source, the Atara, comes before the Amshar Shalom. The Amshar Shalom was in the 1500s. There's an earlier source already in the 1400s. The Leket Yosher is the Talmud of the Trumas Hadeshen. So he writes on page 12 that his Rebbe had an Atara on his talus. He had a marking that the Trumas Hadeshen's talus should always be the same tzitzis in the front it would be every single time. And his Atara was blue, to remind him of Tcheles. And therefore, that his attire was that color. And then he goes and tells a story that his wife subsequently got him an attire for his talus that was red. He didn't really like it so much because he really wanted a blue one to remind him of Tcheles. But because of Shalom Bias, he switched it, and sometimes he wore the red attire with the talus, and sometimes he wore the blue one. Which may even hint to the minag, people have the minag Motzei Shabbos, they say it's a Bishum Shalom Bias to fold up the talisim. So there's some sort of connection between Shalom Bias and the Talesim. We see the Trumas Hadeshen was careful, even though he had a specific attire that he liked, he was careful to even make his wife happy and get the one that he bought. What? No, there's a segula that's brought down by the Mekubalim to specifically folded by Motzei Shabbos. So,
otherwise people push it off?
No, whatever, you could just do it next Erev Shabbos, whatever it is, there's some segula. We'll discuss another time. So, Rav Asher Weiss asked in the shir, it's not in the Svarim, he gave a shir regarding Malam Mekodesh Ein Maridim on Parshas Truman Tufshin Ayin Hay. So 3 years ago. So he asked why it's assumed that the tzitzis in the front have more Kedusha than the ones in the back. Why? Maybe the ones in the back have more Kedusha. Where does the Yam Shal Shoma get the idea that the tzitzis in the front have more Kedusha than the ones in the back? So he says that the source for the Atara is not the above Yerushalmi. It's incorrect. He doesn't think that there's a connection between the tzitzis and the Yerushalmi about the crushim of the Mishkan. He says that it's rather a Tosus and Shabbos and Daf Sadiches. Tosus says when they would travel, they would always stack the poles of the Mishkan with all the tops facing the same direction. They didn't just haphazardly, the poles were laid down on a wagon, and they always were facing the same direction, all the top parts always lying at the same edge. Why? Malan v'kodesh ein moridin. It's not proper that the bottom part of the keresh, the bottom part of the pole, should be that was on the ground near the dirt, should be touching the top part of the pole. And even though there's no greater kedusha at the top or the bottom, rather it was simply more dignified because the top part wasn't in the dirt and it wasn't on the bottom. So this Tosus shows us what? That Malin Bekodesh, that when something attains a status of holiness, is applicable when dealing with the placement and direction of the same object. Right? Even in the same object, we always put the poles of the Mishkan facing the same way because it's simply facing up. Simply because it's facing up, it contains a higher level of Kedusha. And we see from this object that simply by being in the same position maintains the object's Kedusha. I saw another explanation for the Debrei Tzina Rav in the Ber Moshe Chelakei. He says because when you daven, the front of the talus, the tzitzis, face the Aron Kodesh, and therefore it has greater Kedusha. I don't know why, but he says that facing the Aron Kodesh gives the tzitzis in the front greater Kedusha. All of this is side lahalacha by the Shla, and it's quoted by the Magen Avraham. You see over here, the Magen Avraham writes in Shulchan Aruch and Siman Ches, V'nagu la'asos atara mechatichas meshi. So now the Magen Avraham tells us how it should be made, from a piece of silk. L'siman she'osan tzitzis shalafanim, to identify the tzitzis in the front, shula olam, lefanim, they should always be there, and he cites the Yerushalmi and the Shla, and all the different writings as well. This is Sayyid Lahalacha by the Mishabura as well in Simen Ches. The Reish Yischachma, the famous Sephardi Mekubal, so he writes in the Shar Kedushin Parak Vav that by his generation, all of Ashkenaz had an Atara, all the Ashkenaz had an Atara, even some of the Jews of Italy, and he says this was the Minag by far and was widespread everywhere. However, comes the Arizal, and you actually see the Magen Avraham quotes the Arizal as well. And the Arizal says in the Shara Kavanos that there's no need to place an Atara on the Talus because there's only a concept of Malin Bekodesh, that something retains its Kedusha when it comes to Tashmishe Kedusha, when it comes to an item that has inherent holiness, a Sefer Torah, a Mezuzah, an Aron Kodesh, a Shul. Those are Tashmishe Kedusha that have inherent Kedusha. However, it does not apply to Tashmishe Mitzvah, objects that are not holy, but are used for a mitzvah. For example, tzitzis. Tzitzis have only special because they're used for a mitzvah, not because there's inherent kedusha. That's why we wear our tzitzis into the bathroom, because there's no special holiness about the tzitzis. A yarmulke, not even so, whatever it may be, the lulav, it's just used for the sake of the mitzvah, but it doesn't have inherent kedusha. And he says, Malan B'Kodesh only applies to things that are inherently holy on their own. And this is the... What?
No Seamus.
No Seamus, exactly. Take Seamus, put them in a plastic bag, and put them respectfully in the garbage. So this is the opinion of the Prima Gadim, citing the Shach, citing the Mordechai as well. What's the Mordechai talking about? So the Gemara in Erechon Da Vav says that when one donates a candelabra or a candle holder to the shul, so you can't use it for a different purpose. If I make a donation that this should be used specifically for the shul, you can't use it for a mundane practice. And the Gemara explains that the Braisa means that it may not be used for personal use, but you can use it for another Dvar Mitzvah. If I donate the candelabra to the shul and I don't use it for the shul, I can use it to search for chametz, or I can use it to for a Shabbos mirror. I'm using it for a mitzvah, but I can't take it and I can't use it for my own personal use, so I can read by it for no other reason. So the Mordechai explains that you can switch the item for a lesser Dvar Mitzvah, and there's no problem of Ein Moridim. Why? Because Malan B'Kodesh Erino only applies to something that is inherently Kadosh, not just something that was designated for a Mitzvah. Something that's inherently Kadosh is more special as well. And other poskim cite this difference as well. And the Gemara in Megillah says that Tashmish Mitzvah, like Tzitzis, can be thrown out, as we said. And therefore the Arizal himself was not careful about whether the same Tzitzis were in the front or the back. The Arizal did not have an Atara. He took the Talis on, whether it faced north, south, east, or west. He didn't care. Whatever side came up when he pulled it out of his Talis bag, he used it. And the Arizal is cited by the Magen Avraham here as well. And it's the opinion of the Ben Yishchai in Parshas Bereishis. Comes the Elia Rabba, and he cites the Rosh Shari Knesset HaGadol of Chaim Ben Avista, who says that the Atara, this piece that we mount on the talus, originated as another piece of fabric to strengthen the part of the talus where the head is so it doesn't ruin quickly. He said it has nothing to do with Kedusha, it was just good policy. It was an enforced piece of fabric to make sure that it didn't wear because people were putting it on their head. And once the cloth was already being attached, so they made it look nice. If I'm going to put something else on the talus, I might as well dress it up. And they put other things on it to make it look pretty. And the Elia Rabba says that according to this explanation, there's no reason to make sure that one side of the talus is always on top, because it's simply a practical use where it came from. Because practically, I always put it by this side of my head and it got worn more often, but nothing necessarily special about it as well. The Mora Katsira of Yaakov Emden says that the reason of the Shari Knesset HaGadola doesn't make any sense. Because if you wanted to preserve the talus, what's the best way to do it?
Rotate.
Rotate it, he says. Just rotate the talus. If I cared about not going through the fabric, why should I sew something else onto it? Just rotate it every single day. Turn it 90 degrees, and that'll preserve the talus in an even better way. He also agrees with the Arizal in principle, and in fact, the Nazir HaShimshon cites the Mishnah in Kalim Perechavches, which seems to say that you can always rotate the talus and change it every single time you want. Now, it's unclear exactly what talus we're talking about over there, but it seems to be talking about some sort of shawl, and they would rotate in all different types of directions. In addition, those who argue, the Lakute Yehuda cites the Rebbe of Pilz, the Admoni Pilz. The Lakute Yehuda is a collection of the comments of the Ger family, of the Ger Rebbes. So they note that we see another place where something had some sort of aspect of Kedusha that was all mixed into one. When Yaakov Avinu came to Har Moriah and he wanted to go to sleep at night, so we know from Rashi that there was a fight amongst the rocks, right? Each one wanted his head by the tzaddik's head, and they fought and fought and fought until what? HaKadosh Baruch Hu put them all together and became one rock. So the Admor Pilz asks, how come the rock didn't complain? Well, we're all one rock now, I want my head to be in the position that's closer to Yaakov's head. Okay, it's very nice that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a miracle and it's all one rock. But how come the chalik of the rock that's on the bottom wasn't complaining that the piece of the rock on the top had his head closer to Yaakov Avinu's head? Why? Because when you're dealing with one entity, one item, there's no concept of greater Kedusha. The whole thing is Kadosh from top to bottom. The whole rock that was used for Yaakov's head was holy top and bottom. The whole talus is holy all over. Why should one side of the talus have more Kedusha? We have no concept that where you have one item, one concrete unit, that one section of that unit is holier than another part of the section. So I saw in this sefer, last night I was in the Wayu's farm sale, and I was perusing around, and I saw a sefer that has three very interesting topics that are totally unrelated to each other. It's called Chut HaMashoah, so it has three different topics. One is about Ner Nosef B'Chanukah, lighting an extra Chanukah candle. The other section is about kissing a mezuzah. And the third section is about Atara L'Talis, putting in Atara N'Talis. So this was a Siman Min HaShemayim. You have to get this safer. So it's written by, published this year in Lakewood by Tzvi Peretz Shabtai Pfeffer. And so he makes the following point. He says that there is a Hidr of the Beis Yosef. Yosef Karo seems to indicate in Simon Tess and Shulchan Aruch that you only have wool on the talus. You shouldn't have any other fabrics on the talus, only wool. Even in the corners, sometimes they use other fabric to strengthen the corners of our talasim, maybe cotton, something like that. And even by the atara, even on top, it should only be wool. And this is cited by the Ben Ishchai and the Kaf HaChayim. And you can actually find this in stores. You can find a talus Beis Yosef, which is a talus where every single item is wool. Even the atar is made of wool, even the corners that are enforced are also made of wool. So is this minhag, where does it come from? Because they want to make sure that there's not even a chashash of anything else might being shatnez or any type of thing coming into it. It should be wool, pure wool, across the board, no matter what. So he records that he had a conversation with Rabbi Eli Mansur, who's the famous Darshan from Brooklyn, and Rabbi Mansur told him that he doesn't think that this is what the Beis Yosef meant. He thinks all the Sephardim of the Talesim, they're misinterpreting the Beis Yosef. Rabbi Yosef Karo just meant that the guf of the talus itself, the main structure of the talus, should only be wool. But anything else you add on to it, whether it's something to reinforce the corners or the atara, who cares? He's talking about the main structure of the talus itself. And the only other materials are only secondary to the talus, and therefore he records that Rabbi Mansur told him that he thinks this whole idea of a Beis Yosef talus, because the atara has to be a special way, because it shouldn't have anything else besides wool. Our ataras are not made of wool, they're made of cotton or silk. So he says that this is not what the Beis Yosef meant. Okay, now let's turn to the material of the atar. We see there's a machlokas, so you need one, and obviously we see the minhag for most people is to have one, but let's turn now to the material. So, as noted above, the Trumas Hadeshin's atara was blue. The minhag is not like that anymore. I've not seen a tcheles colored atara anywhere. So we know that has fallen out of favor. Shari Tshuva says the minhag is that it should be white, because we don't want it to stand out on the talus. We don't want it to be... The atara is there to serve the talus. It's not there to be its own special entity. Therefore, he thinks it should be white. So the Levush in Simon Yud says that the atara should not be made of gold and silver. He's very upset about this. He writes, we'll turn to this in a second, that if it's gold or silver, what are people going to think? That the whole point of the talus is to have a fancy thing on top. And they're going to lose focus that the real point of the talus is to have tzitzis, that it's a beged tefillah. They're going to misunderstand what everything is about. And rather, the talus is meant to be designed to cover the entire body. And the Aruch HaShulchan writes in Simen Ches over here, he says, "V'gam yesh osim atara shel kesef barosh hatalis hamunach al harosh, where they put it by their head. Ve'eno kedai debezeh nira da'ikar humasha al harosh." People think that the whole point of the talus is to cover your head. Ube'emes ha'ikar hu amasha al haguf. The talus is supposed to envelop the body. V'chein yesh noagim mitam zeh lasum gam atara shel kesef be'emes ha'talis. So he says, this is where the Rebbe Sheminah comes from by the Hasidim, that they have a strip across the middle of the talus as well. Because to show that it's not just the top of the talus, but also the whole talus itself should be adorned and beautiful. Aval gam zeinu kedai, but he says, this is also wrong. V'rabim gedolim munuim esatzma mizem. Many, many great people don't have ataras on their talasim. V'chein nachol na'os shalo yehav talus rak tzemer. U'mal kesef azav b'talus. The talus should be wool. And don't put gold and silver, no reason for things like this, on the talus. So says the Aruch HaShulchan. And then he quotes the Arizal and says, you don't even need an atara in the first place. Now, let's defend the practice of putting silver and other things on the atara. So Rav Moshe writes in Igros Moshe or Achaim Chela Kesim and Chaf, that the reasoning of the Levush and the Aruch HaShulchan cannot uproot the Minog. He says the Aruch HaShulchan cannot come along, you know, after centuries of people putting silver on their ataras and simply uproot the whole thing. Now, Rav Moshe then goes on to say something very interesting. He says that he doesn't have an atara on his own talis, and it was never his thing. But if you look in the cover of the Rav Moshe biography, Rav Moshe's wearing his talis and tefillin, he clearly has an atara. So I don't know what Rav Moshe meant when he says he doesn't have an atara. Maybe he meant that he doesn't have a silver atara. I'm not clear what he meant, but he definitely has something on his talis, because you can see in the picture. So it must mean that he didn't have a silver atara. Rav Menashe Klein writes in the Mishnah Halachos in Chelek Yud Ches that since we don't have our talis on our heads all of davening, so it shows that people understand that the atara is not for mainly, the whole point of the talis is not to cover your head. We don't walk around all davening with our heads covered. We take it off, we put it on, we do different things. Some people don't even cover their heads with talisim. So he says at the end of the day, nobody's going to think that if I put a fancy silver atar on my talis, it means I only think the whole purpose is to cover my head. There, in this sefer, the Chodem Hasholosh, so he brings an interesting proof. The Matzah Ephraim writes in Tuf Reish Yud by putting on a kitzel, he writes about the minug that many people would have silver on their kitzel, even though the kitzel is supposed to be Beged Misa, supposed to remind us of the day of death, and supposed to be very serious, but many people put silver on the Atara, going back over 100 years. So the Matzah Ephraim says, why silver okay? Because silver looks like white. It's indistinguishable from far away. It blends into the colors. It's not like gold or red. It doesn't really stand out. It fits in with the general theme of whiteness. And therefore, the Chodem Hasholosh suggests that maybe you can apply the same reasoning to our talisim. If you have a silver atara, it's whitish looking, and therefore perhaps it blends in. As to whether the atara should be removed from a talis by someone who's going to be buried in their talis, so that is also a machlokes amongst minhagim. The Minchas Elazar records that his father kept his atara on, because we say tzaddikim yoshim v'ataro sehem v'roshehem. The tzaddikim will sit in Gan Eden with the atara, their crowns, on their head. So he would bury with the atara on the talis. That's a unique piece of drush. It says in the biography of Rishon Shvadron, the Brijana Rav, that he told them to take his atara off of his talis when he was buried. So we see different minhagim as well. What about the minhag Chabad? If anyone is davening next to anyone who is Chabad, they will notice that there is no atara on their talisim. They have a lining underneath the talis, but there's nothing on top of the talis. So what is the source of this? So the Shulchan Aruch Harav even writes very clearly in Simen Ches that the minhag is to wear an atara. So the Shulchan Aruch Harav, the Baal HaTanya, says to wear an atara. How could it be all of Chabad is not wearing an atara? So the answer is twofold. First of all, the Aruch HaShulchan already told us that there's a minhag to have something underneath. So that already acts as an indicator to know where the top of the talus is. There is something already built in. They have the piece of fabric underneath to know where the top is that goes over their head. But what about on the outside? Why is their talus so different looking? So Rav Dov Ber Rifkin, who is a Ram in Torah Vadas, a number of decades ago, has a sefer called Ashkavta de Rebbe. He was a Lubavitcher Chassid, and he has all different types of lumdus and pilpul and different ideas in his sefer. So he writes on page Chaf Beis as follows, that it's a simen to a famous story with the Alter Rebbe. When the Alter Rebbe was taken to jail, and they needed to be saved from jail, so the Hasidim took their silver ataros, and they used them to ransom him to get out of jail. And they paid for the ransom by taking the silver from their talisim to pay for the Alter Rebbe to get out of jail. And as a memory to what the Hasidim did for the Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Hasidim don't have ataras on their talisim, on the outside, anything silver, anything like that, to remember what they did for the Rebbe at that time. So this certainly has covered all the minhagim and the halachos pertaining to ataras. There's a discussion about putting psukim in the atara, but that's not for right now as well. When you sew the atara, you need to make sure it's not shatnez, or using threads like that. Also an issue for not right now. Let's just discuss a number of other areas in halacha where this rule of I had a specific position that made it kadosh, therefore I need to retain that position every time. The most common comparison is to sukkah, because the Maharil writes in Hilchos Sukkah in Os Vav. He says that his Rebbe would mark the panels of his sukkah with an aleph base. because he needed to make sure that the same panels of the sukkah were in the same spot every single year, and this is cited by the poskim and the Ber Heitev in Shulchan Aruch and Siman Tav Reish Lamed. Comes Rav Yaakov Ettlinger in the Bikurei Yaakov. We have over here on the next page. So he quotes the Maharil, quoting the name of the Maharash, and quote, cites the Yerushalmi again, that the Mishkan and the Krushim, everything has to be in the same spot. And then he quotes the post, he quotes the by the Rabbi Tzitzis and the Magen Avram and the Arizal, and at the end, the second of the widest lines, he says, what does the sukkah have to do with the Yerushalmi and the Mishkan? He says, I understand why by the Mishkan some panels were holier than others because they were closer to the place where the holier sacrifices were slaughtered. I get that, he says. And it was closer to the menorah and all these different types of things. But when it comes to tzitzis and the directions of the sukkah, why would one panel of the sukkah be holier than the other? No part of your sukkah is holier than a different aspect. And therefore he finds no reason why one should do this whatsoever. Ravaji Yosef writes in Yabi Omer, he also says that all the sides of the sukkah are equally holy. So who cares if I put panel A this place 1 year, or panel B there the next year? They're all equally holy. So in the Tosefis Bikurim, which is the second printed comments of Rav Yaakov Ettlinger on his Sefer, so he cites a ha'ara that he received in the mail from the Rav of Wurzburg, who said that there's a greater kedusha to the part of the sukkah that's letzorech the mitzvah. That's the main part of the sukkah, because that part has more kedusha since it's hooks the mitzvah. So meaning, we know that how many walls do you need in a sukkah? Three. Any fourth wall, the Wurzburg Rav wants to say, has less kedusha, because you don't need it for the mitzvah. You're just adding it on for a secondary reason. But it's not the main part of the mitzvah itself. Tosus in Sukkah says that it's only chal on the parts that are necessary. So comes Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, and he rejects this, because he says, we assume that kedusha is on all the walls of the sukkah. How are you supposed to point to know which is the fourth wall of the sukkah that has less kedusha? How are you supposed to know? All the walls of the sukkah are equally kedusha.
Such that one part of its kosher, so the fourth wall might not be overhang
things like
so that.
Certainly, I hear. But at least here, if I have it once, everything is kosher, so then it's all good. Why should it make a difference? So that's his rejection of that. I also saw, and it's quoted here in the Churim HaSholosh, that Rabbi Yitzchak Abadi writes in his Or Yitzchak and Chelak Alf Simen Tes, that after Sukkot, what happens to the Kedusha? So it goes away. The sukkah doesn't remain on your sukkah walls after you put them in the garage. By the Mishkan, I get it. Each wall of the Mishkan is holy, even if I construct or deconstruct it. The Shechina rested on the Mishkan, and now it's holy. It was dedicated by Moshe Rabbeinu. But why should the sukkah still be holy after I take it apart? It's sitting in the garage. It's not kadosh anymore. I don't have to be careful around it. It might have tashmisha, a mitzvah, but it doesn't have the kedusha of the Shechina that we talk about during the days of sukkahs. What? Even if you leave it up, true, for sure, it loses its kedusha. And also, he asked a second question. Why, according to the Maharil, are we only concerned about the walls? What about the schach? Why doesn't the Maharil say the schach has to be in the same spot every single year because of the kedusha? So how come the Maharil doesn't say that? So the Churim HaSholosh says that he was talking with the Talmud of Rabbi Abadi, and the Talmud told him as follows. He says it's most likely because in the days of the Maharil, who saved their schach? It was trees. You threw it out for the next year and that was it. Nobody saved their schach. Saving schach is a modern day invention where you have a mat, you roll it up, you put it away. That's why the Maharil didn't say it. But maybe if they had mats in the days of the Maharil, he probably would have said the same thing as well, according to his reason. The Aruch HaShulchan says that it's proper minute to be careful about putting the walls of the sukkah in the same spot each year. But we see that many poskim, the Bikurei Yaakov and others, question this minute as well. We have a couple more minutes. So we'll do one more thing, and that's the placement of the shulchan in the shul, the bima. So the Chassam Sofer Nor HaChaim in Siman Chaf Ches uses the Yerushalmi and this Maharil to explain why the shul should not move the bima. The bima always has to be in the same spot. And he says once the bima has its place, it's not proper to move it to another part of the shul. And this is the tshuva. He invokes the principle of Chadash Asur Min HaTorah, that you can't go changing things around and change them in Hagam. comes the Machna Chaim in Chelek Beis, who's a Talmud of the Chassam Sofer, and he says that since the bima is not sent permanently in its place, it's not considered zocha to the spot. If the bima is movable, then it's not considered necessarily kadosh in that spot. And the Karen Ledavid in Siman Lamed Aleph says the krushim are used for the purpose of the Mishkan, and therefore they were dependent on the kedusha of the Mishkan. But the bima is more kadosh than the shul. In the ranking of what's holier, a bima is more kodesh than the rest of the shul. And therefore, obviously it can be moved, because the shul depends on the bima, and therefore that's what's schlepping the kedusha of the shul along. The Maharam Lublin says as well, you can move the Aron Kodesh if necessary in all these different aspects. The Shuvas by Rav Israel Hildesheim are talking about Atzei Chaim as Sefer Torah. Can you move the Eitz Chaim from right to left if it needs to be changed? He discusses this as well. He says it's mutter, and it's also the opinion of other poskim as well.